Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
How do we influence and persuade other people? And how do we keep ourselves open to being influenced and persuaded when it's appropriate to do so? We talk a lot about discourse, the lack of discourse, how all the shouting and the doubling down we often see makes real persuasion very difficult, sometimes impossible, especially on the internet. Well, Dr. David Zarefsky is a 30-year professor at Northwestern University. He's an expert in communication. And his lecture series on the Great Courses Plus is kind of a forensic breakdown on how argumentation works, what we often get wrong, how to structure an argument, the role of evidence and the facts, common fallacies and mistakes we make, when to compromise, when not to compromise, and how to handle arguments on various levels, whether it's the formal debate with people on stage and the experts, or it's a casual discussion over coffee with a buddy. The course is called Argumentation, the Study of Effective Reasoning. And as somebody who's kind of a student of these kinds of exchanges, and I want to get better at it, as many of you do, I found it interesting and very helpful. I think you will as well. The Great Courses Plus streams over 8,000 lectures on a host of subjects directly to your TV, computer, or smartphone. Every day should be about learning something new. And the Great Courses Plus is a fantastic resource to do so. Sign up right now with my special URL. You'll immediately get a free month with unlimited access to all of their lectures. So sign up today at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Just a heads up on next Tuesday's broadcast, I'm going to teach Sunday school. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. You see, I'm amazed and astounded at how much interesting stuff there is in the Bible that gets skipped over by our pastors, by our Sunday school teachers, by our vacation Bible school leaders, by the children's pastors. They just skip over the good stuff, the most interesting stuff. Oh, sure, it's kind of crazy and bizarre and occasionally bloody and violent and sort of inexcusable. But outside of those things, I mean, at least it's interesting to hear about. And yet they don't teach it in Sunday school. We're going to remedy that next Tuesday as I grab some of the most bizarre, the most strange, many of the most obscure, and sometimes just the most horrifying stories of Scripture and format those for a Sunday school lesson right here on the radio. I'm even working on a guest instructor who might pop in and teach an extra bonus lesson for the show. I'm still working on it. I'm not going to make any promises, but that's coming up next Tuesday. Going to be a ride, okay? It's going to be a ride, so get ready. Today's show is called Praying, P-R-A-Y-I-N-G, Praying on the Disabled. The show exists because so many people ask me to do a show on this topic because it is so relevant for them and it happens so often when they are targeted by often well-meaning religious people who name and claim their healing or come up with some excuse as to why they are experiencing adversity in this life. I mean, it's interesting. It would be an experiment, I think, to go to not just a Christian, let's be more specific than that. Let's just find a church on the corner. Christian church over here on this corner, at the corner of First and Elm, okay? And you go into the 9 a.m. Sunday service. Now, these are not just Christians. This is a specific denomination. They are under a single pastor, and they all believe in and hold to a specific certain book. And you were to go in and ask all 200 or whatever congregants, what is God's plan for physical wellness here on earth? Are we supposed to be healthy and whole and healed, or are we supposed to experience physical adversity, disease, and other health challenges in order to build our faith and ask them what they think. It would be amazing. It'd be fascinating to see the huge number of clashing answers that would spill forth. They'd be contradicting each other at every turn. These people are all on the same team, worshiping at the same church, to the same God, reading the same Bible the same way. And they can't even agree. And I find that fascinating. I had an email shared with me. It was sent in by Amanda. It is a blog about disabilities. It's titled, What Christians Have Taught Me About My Disability. It was posted by a user named Keisha on the 1st of February of this year. It says this, You're amazing. I've been watching you for the past 10 minutes. I don't know how you do it. God has truly blessed you. My lips barely curving into a smile, I thank her. Still facing forward, I gesture for my seeing eye dog to start walking. She takes a few steps, then stops. Sadie, forward, I command. She doesn't move. We were wondering if we could pray for you. A man to my left. To heal you, the woman from before explains from behind me. It won't take long. Another woman in front of me. Almighty and merciful Father, a man to my right begins. The woman from before comes closer to me. She lays her hand on my shoulder, lightly pushing me deeper into the circle. Please fill her with your healing power. Precious God, cast out all that should not be inside of her. We ask you to mend all that is broken. I'm sorry, I interrupt. I'm not looking to be healed. Thank you for the thought, though. I gesture for Sadie to go forward. She doesn't move. You don't want to be healed? For your eyes to be fixed? Your life would be so much better. The woman in front of me. I'm actually happy with my life right now, being blind and all. I really have to go, so if you'll excuse me. Sadie, forward. Sadie guides me to the left onto the grass. We walk a few steps, and she guides me back onto the sidewalk. Out of the circle now, I whisper to Sadie to hop up. She picks up her pace. We're rounding the corner when the woman who first spoke to me catches up to us. She apologizes for offending me. She said that they just wanted to help. They just wanted to ask their Lord to heal me so that my body could function the way it was created to be. Don't you want to be able to see, to be whole and complete? No, I don't. I'm fine with the way I am. Taking my right hand in both of hers, she went on to say, You have a point. God made you this way for a reason. He has a plan for you. God bless you. Before I could say, No, you misunderstood me, that wasn't my point, she patted me on the shoulder, turned, and ran back to her friends. For as long as I can remember, Christians have told me about my disability. That having a disability was a sickness and needed to be healed. Or that my disability was a blessing meant to touch the lives of those around me. I was 7 when my brother's best friend's mother cornered me in the kitchen, her fingers shackling my wrists, her voice loud and insistent, speaking in tongues. She told me that by the power of God I would be healed, no more suffering. I was 7. Suffering was a word I hadn't experienced yet. Later on, I found out she was talking about my eyes. I was 12 when I lost the vision of my right eye and the vision in my left eye quickly deteriorating. Angry with my parents, my eye doctors, the world, I tried my hardest to fight being labeled blind. That year, the assistant to my PE coach told me there was a reason I was going through this. God had plans for me. By taking my sight, I would be a test for Christians. Will they be respectful and charitable to the unfortunate? I can't remember what activity we had that day for PE, but I know I was upset that I couldn't participate. I needed to hear, I'll talk with a coach to make sure all activities are accessible, or this won't happen again, I promise you. I did not need to hear that I was being used as a test for Christians to prove something. I was 15 the first time a pastor tried to heal me. Instead of shaking my hand and briefly commenting on the sermon, he took my sunglasses off, placed his hands on either side of my head, and started to speak in tongues. My cane was taken from me. Those who were watching came closer, pushing me and the pastor in the middle of the circle. Later on, I would learn that the people who surrounded me and held me there did it to protect me. Sometimes during a situation like this, the person who's getting healed would go into spasms, shaking and trembling with the Spirit. It happened twice more at different churches. My permission was never asked for. The first time a group of Christians surrounded me and started to pray was when I was 20. It has happened 10 times since then. I get requests when I'm walking to the library, walking to my apartment, getting juice from Publix. I had to get forceful with my rejection for a healing prayer twice. In both instances, they refused to accept my decision. One didn't let me out of the circle until I took my cane to their ankles. By that point, they angrily told me that I deserved to be blind and that I was being punished by God for my mother's sin. And the other didn't let me out till my driver from paratransit came to pick me up. When I'm out with family or friends, I've had strangers tell them how wonderful they are, that they are doing good work, ending with a heartfelt, God bless them. When this situation comes up, I remember the last line in Luke chapter 14, 12 through 14. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. Which I take to mean there's no social or financial gain in spending time with the disabled. We have nothing and are incapable of offering you anything in return. The only thing you get out of it is a feel-good moment, charity work, humbling yourself for God's reward. My family is used to these incidences. They'll smile or nod and continue on with their business. My friends usually smile back with, "She's actually doing me a favor." This is not to say that all Christians are ableist. People with disabilities are to be pitied, healed, fixed, made normal, made complete. Nor am I saying that they all believe disabilities are an act of God, punishment, warning, or a test. Nor am I saying that Christianity promotes any of the above. However, I'm saying that the culture of the church does neglect the disabled. Not hiring interpreters for the deaf. Websites not accessible for the blind, buildings not accessible for people in wheelchairs, programs, clubs, and events for the church not inclusive. And by doing that, they give a clear message of insensitivity and indifference. It also doesn't help that sermons are full of examples where disability is viewed as a punishment for sinning or lack of faith, something to be endured in order to purify the righteous, and an act of charity. The continuous metaphoric use of disability and disobedience to God doesn't help either. We are not to be pitied. We are not the teachable moment. We are not sick or incomplete. We are not a miracle. We are not a punishment. And we are not an act of charity. So Christians, when you see someone with a disability, if your first reaction is to pity them, to hope that one day they will be healed, to think highly of the person they are with, re-examine your attitudes toward people with disabilities. Where do you think these thoughts are coming from, and why do you still hold to them? Do you really think the only way for a person to feel complete and happy with themselves and their life is to be able-bodied? If you're able-bodied, do you feel complete and happy with yourself and your life? Should people really be praised for being with or a friend to a person with a disability? The article is called "What Christians Have Taught Me About My Disability." I will include the link in the description box of this broadcast. I had a message in from Brian. He said, "I've got to chime in about my guide dog, Morgan. Before I went to college, I wanted to get a guide dog to assist with more graceful travel around the campus. A tangential benefit was to help out as a social catalyst, because not being able to spot people whom you'd like to speak to in a busy social setting makes making friends and dating a little more difficult. On top of all that, I just wanted a dog, so it all worked. I was, at the time, a doubting Christian, leaning heavily towards the agnostic atheist viewpoint. The Methodist church my family attended was so excited about me getting a guide dog. So much so, they announced it to the congregation and planned a laying on of hands to bless the dog in the Lord's name. They even apparently took time out of one of the Sunday services to go over proper etiquette for service animals before I returned from my month-long trip to train with Morgan, my golden retriever companion. So upon my return during communion, I went to the altar to kneel, and one of the pastors came over and began praying over me and the dog. Before I knew it, there were like 7 people crowded around me. Morgan, for her part, was well-behaved, despite being surrounded by so many strange people in a new environment. It took everything in me not to bust out laughing at the absurdity of it all. They even gave me a piece of communion bread I could give to her if I so chose, which made me want to laugh a little more. After the service, everyone and their mother wanted to come say hi, greet me, take pictures. It was so ridiculous. I felt as if Morgan was being paraded around as this loyal servant of the Lord for helping the disabled among their flock, and I just smiled and nodded along. Her collar now bears an inverted pentagram to keep away all that Jesus magic. Plus, there's something comical about the cutest golden retriever ever wearing a symbol of the devil himself. Brian, that is amazing. Thanks for sharing your story, man. I have area code 208. You are on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
Alistair.
Alistair, we're talking about praying on the disabled, how religious people and institutions approach those with disabilities. You have any thoughts for the show?
So just a little bit of background. I have been disabled pretty much my entire life. I have a connective tissue disorder that causes me to dislocate everything. So I've been in a wheelchair for a couple of years now. And in our little town, we have a lot of churches, and mostly my experience is being prayed over, mostly without my permission because I don't let people do that, but they want to anyway. And what I've noticed is that they use praying as an excuse to not do anything for me, at least nothing helpful.
Tell me what you mean by praying over you without your permission. Is it that they're doing it in your presence? I mean, if someone wants to pray for me for any reason on their own, I'm like, go knock yourself out. I mean, give me some context.
No, it's mostly praying over me in my presence. You know, Lord Jesus, let this disabled person get better, that sort of thing.
Tell me about the disorder itself. I'm curious. So if you reach over and pick up a cup of coffee or something, your arm can dislocate?
I have a weight limit of about 10 pounds, and if I lift anything more than that, I can dislocate anything from my fingers to my elbows to my arms, ribs, anything. So what ends up happening is sometimes things will just fall out on their own without any pressure or stimulation to make them fall out. My hip does this constantly.
Do you feel there's truth in that internet meme that says prayer is a way of feeling like you're helping while doing absolutely nothing then?
Oh, yeah, exactly, because it's not like they come over and help to do my dishes, which are now piling up out of the sink and I have no more clean plates. They don't want to help, but they want to feel like they're helping because, you know, helping the poor disabled person makes you feel good.
Do you feel like churches prey on disabled people in some way or hyper-target them?
I think they are hyper-targeted because it's thought that we can't help ourselves a lot of the time, and the poor disabled people don't know what's best for ourselves, and so we're going to help them. Another thing in this area is we have the New Age types, which is a whole different ball of wax. I've had more problems with the New Age people than the Christians, to be honest.
What are they holding, crystals and blue light and incense over you? What's going on?
Oh, the crystals, the blue light, the incense. We also have a lot of old hippies, so here have some kale. My friends and I call it the here have some kale question. yoga is... yeah, pretty much. Yoga is really popular. People keep suggesting yoga to me, even though in the medical literature it says, please don't let people with connective tissue disorders do yoga because they'll dislocate things. But people think all sorts of things will help me. I've been offered crystals and here, let me do some tarot readings for you. Oh, you're going to get better in the future. I'm always going to get better in the future, by the way. No one ever says that this is never going to work. No tarot reading has ever told me that, oh, by the way, you're stuck with this for the rest of your life.
Once you or I are across state lines, your healing will emerge, right?
Yeah, something. Yeah. I live in Idaho, real close to Washington, and there's also like pot will cure everything too, which does not. That one I've tried, then it does not cure. But yeah, we actually have a crystal store here in town, of a small college town, that purports to, like, hematite's a big one. Here, we're going to fix your blood problems with this magnetic rock, which goes about as well as you'd expect.
Your state of mind sounds good. It sounds like you've got a pretty positive outlook, and, you know, despite the challenges, I don't know, what's the color of your life these days?
You kind of have to have a positive outlook when you know you're going to be this way for the rest of your life, because if you sit around being depressed, you know, that's going to end up being in your entire life, and it's going to eat you from the inside. So, you know, try to have a positive outlook, try to do what you can within your abilities. You know, I do some volunteer work, I do some political work for, you know, local organizations. I work at PFLAG. So got to keep up with what you can, or else despair is going to eat you.
Well, it helps if you can find what you love and do what you love, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Alistair, thanks for being a part of the conversation. Greatly appreciated.
All right. Thank you very much, Seth. Have a good day.
Jeremy sent a message and said, 15 years ago, I was psychotic and could not control my thoughts. At the time, I was steeped in Christianity, and the, quote, cure for this problem was prayer, spiritual counseling, fasting, and being prayed over with corn and oil. Finally, I went to the hospital and was admitted to a psych unit. Once there, I was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. It was amazing to me how many people in the religious community attempt to cure the mentally ill and either ignore the obvious need for medical help or encourage delusion as a, quote, gift from the Lord. Thankfully, through the proper channels and medication, I've been free of psychosis for almost 10 years now. My delusional thinking was fueled by religion. And it was only when I finally let it go and embraced the great Satan that is science did I find peace. Jeremy, thank you very much for sharing that. And I'm glad you found the solutions through science here in the real world. That's fantastic stuff, man. I had a message in from Holly who said this. She said, when I was a child, I had severe asthma attacks and sometimes would need to be hospitalized. I used to carry a rescue inhaler around with me, especially in the spring when allergens would flare up my asthma. My parents used to be very religious and were regular attendees at an Assembly of God church. They believed in faith healing and speaking in tongues and all that. One Sunday, there was this evangelist who did faith healing and traveled around doing crusades and revivals with Benny Hinn. He was also friends with our pastor, so this guy was visiting our church. I was having trouble breathing that morning because I was running around playing in the children's church. We were playing outside, and there was freshly cut grass, and it was hot, and all these triggers worked together to create a perfect storm, so to speak. When it came to the severity of my asthma flare-up, the worst part was that I dropped my rescue inhaler somewhere on the church property. I had no idea where. This was a good-sized church, too. So anyway, I'm lying on the floor in the children's church sanctuary, which was up the stairs above the main sanctuary. I was very scared and trying to tell the adults that I need my inhaler, but I was panicking. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't talk. It was a haze for me because I was going in and out of consciousness. For some reason, instead of calling 911, the adults take me into the sanctuary and have that crazy Benny Hinn clone evangelist pray for me. He was all trying to stand me up and was laying his hands on my head and shaking me. And at this point, I just fell on the floor, and I don't remember much after that. My parents later filled in the gaps for me. The evangelist and several people from the congregation were all trying to cast demons out of my unconscious body. My body started convulsing, likely from lack of oxygen. And that's when my dad ran into the lobby to call 911. A friend of my parents was a paramedic for the fire department and started doing CPR on me. I really think that if it weren't for the rational people stepping in, I could have died. I was rushed to the hospital and given oxygen. I had to spend the night in the hospital. And I ultimately came out of the whole ordeal relatively fine. I feel very lucky. We stopped going to the church after that. We had a lot of family that still went there. And the way they remember the story is very different. They're convinced it was the evangelist that saved my life with his healing powers. I shake my head in disgust when I recall the whole thing, because the evangelist praying over me like a fucking voodoo priest was precious time that was lost in a severe medical emergency. But whatever, what do I know? I'm only the person who almost died because of superstitious nonsense. People who have chronic medical conditions, in my opinion, suffer the most in fundamental churches because they are highly targeted for faith healing, and it can be incredibly dangerous, as illustrated in my story. I have area code 705 on the switchboard. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What is your name?
My name's Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. We're talking about praying on the disabled. What's your story, your perspective?
Well, I actually became an atheist because my daughter was born. When I was 24, I gave birth to a little girl with severe genetic disabilities. She had a cleft palate, heart defects, multiple medical issues that kept her in an ICU for about 3 months. And today she's 22 and severely disabled. She actually lives in a group home and she functions at the level of probably a 1 to 2 year old child. She's nonverbal, suffers from seizures, and she has a whole host of these things. But when she was born, I was very naive. I was raised by good parents and stuff, but my grandparents, especially my grandfather, was a Pentecostal minister, and we lived in a very rural and remote area. And so I was very influenced, having to go to, you know, Bible studies and Sunday school, and they were always telling me about the devil, and I remember having nightmares as a kid. So I grew up believing in God and being very fearful of that God. And when she was born, that diagnosis was attached to me as a sinner. So I was told that because I was not a faithful Christian, or as I should be, that her disabilities were caused as a punishment from God.
How did you receive that?
I actually initially felt like I was really to blame. I felt nauseous. There was a time where they actually took me into their home and tried to pray over me and said that I needed to repent. And I felt so sick. I would go home at night and I would cry and I would pray and I would say, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? I'm so sorry. And, you know, I get brought to tears thinking about how naive I was back then, thinking that I was at fault for what caused it. It took a long, long time for me to come to terms with what happened to her because it was so significant and I was so young.
What did you think you had done? Did you just think, well, I was born a sinner, or did you have a troubled youth? Or?
Well, I actually thought that I just wasn't a good enough Christian. I thought, you know, I believed in God and I did all the things I was supposed to, but I always was wary of it and I was always scared of it. Like, I remember going to a Bible camp when I was 7 and I was sent there by my parents. And a man tried to convert me on a bunk bed in the dark at whatever time it was, and I was terrified. And I mean, you know, I had this in my head that I was not a good person. So I didn't think I necessarily did anything specifically, but it was because I wasn't a strong enough believer that I felt like I had done it.
So what happens in your heart when, you know, the child is born and all of these severe disabilities manifest themselves? I mean, I can't imagine what you have gone through. Can you help paint a picture for those of us in the listening audience? What's it like?
Sure. I mean, it's devastating. I mean, I spent 3 months in a hospital with my daughter who, she would die in my arms. She had a deformity in her airway, so she had to have a tube down her throat. So sometimes she'd pull that out by accident and then she'd crash and then all the bells and whistles would go off. And so, you know, I had this post-traumatic stress of having this child who was dying on me constantly. And then when we were given her diagnosis, which is she has an extra chromosome, so it affects every system in her body. We were basically told she would not live past age 5. We know that that's not true because medical advances and stuff, which I love because I've now, you know, studied enough about genetics to understand that, you know, once you fix some of the underlying problems and support her, she can live and she can have a beneficial life. But she has suffered a lot of, she's had like 15 surgeries. She's had heart surgery. She has also suffered from seizures, which caused her to have a lot of behavior issues. And every time she would get something new, my grandparents would say, well, you know, if only Stephanie would repent, you know, if Stephanie would be a better Christian, her daughter wouldn't keep suffering these illnesses. And there was actually a point where we had moved away from them and they had sent tickets to Benny Hinn, the faith healer, in the mail. And I was just mortified thinking, you know, and I tried to do all kinds of good things. And, you know, because I can't fix my daughter and she's always going to be the way she is, I tried to do a lot of good things. So, you know, I established a support group and I participated in research and I was able to some amazing things done. And I thought I was doing a good thing, you know, and I thought, you know, God must have sent her to me to teach me something and to teach the world something, you know, about tolerance and patience and all the stuff. But I could never resolve that concept with the fact that every time something happened to her, she would get worse or get a new diagnosis that made her worse. My grandparents would say it's because of me.
I'd wondered if people would come to you and say, God only brings the mountain into your life so that you can learn how to climb it. You know, we hear those types of platitudes quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. So. And God doesn't give you more than you can handle and everything happens for a reason. And all those things just make me ill now. Yeah. I mean, I found out I was a carrier of her condition. I actually suffered from four miscarriages before I had her. So it was difficult, you know. I just could not have a healthy child. We ended up adopting two beautiful kids, which I'm really grateful for. But all this stuff that happened, it just happens. It's just, there's nothing that can be prevented. And it wasn't until I was much older that I was able to really, I mean, I think it was reading The God Delusion for the first time. I remember driving to one of her significant surgeries and being really scared. And I had picked up this book because I was like, I need to figure this out in my head. And I read it to my husband the whole way to surgery. It was a several hour drive. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is, oh, I get it now, you know? And it was almost like a face palm to the head. You know, I love your face palm videos, but it was like that moment. It was like that moment for me when I just like, right, it's genetics. I can't fix this. God didn't do this, and I'm not a bad person.
Not to go backward too far in your story, but the curiosity's killing me. Did you go to the Benny Hinn convention?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
absolutely
all right.
Not.
I was just curious because, you know, he's one of the biggest, in my opinion, one of the biggest charlatans on planet Earth.
I think in retrospect, I find it fascinating, and I probably should have gone just out of curiosity. But I was so disgusted because it was a connotation to me being a bad person and to try to heal a child who I thought, you know, you can't, what sins of mine would be put on an innocent child, you know? And I had a hard time resolving that. Well, why didn't I have something wrong with me? And if I was such a bad person, why didn't I get cancer or be struck through the phone, you know, by lightning if I was such a horrible person to have caused my child? But no, I thought it was, and it was those types of comments that just pushed me further away. And I'm lucky because my husband was never a strong believer, and my father was never a strong believer. Like so I had a little bit in me to question, but it was never strong enough for me to break free until I was probably in my early 30s. So when she was, you know, going through all these surgeries and stuff, it was enough to push me away. And I had the courage to start saying, sort of publicly, you know, if people would say, well, I don't believe that happened, you know, I don't believe in that way. And even now I am very fearful of speaking out about my beliefs because I have been attacked. You know, if I defend my gay friends, you know, I'm doing the wrong thing, and I'm surrounded by fundamentalist people. And I feel very nervous about that. It's difficult.
Did you ever have a conversation with your grandfather and your grandmother? Did you ever say, this is wrong?
Yeah.
This is.
Well, I mean, my grandfather, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder very late in life. And I know that that was part of what he would believe. Like, he used to believe that he could grow back the legs of people who had diabetes, you know, that had been amputated. And he would be crying and telling me these stories. I knew at some point that no matter what I said to him, it would just, it would not be absorbed, and it wouldn't go over. And my grandmother was so naive in her own way. And she was very simple in the fact that you know, she thought you could drive to Hawaii. Like, she didn't have a very large scope of the world. She believed that she had been saved by God when she was young. She had grown up in England and had some kind of horrible disease and went into a coma for a period of time and had visions of an angel. So she would walk all over the place handing out testimony tapes of her salvation and how she had to save everybody else. So I knew that there was no point to that, and they're both deceased now. So I feel like I can at least put that to rest. My grandfather spent a lot of time traveling, hitchhiking alone because he had alienated most of his family. I have an uncle who tries to reach out to me every year, but he is even worse than my grandfather was. I mean, at one point, my grandfather tried to perform an exorcism on one of his ex-girlfriends. That was many, many years ago. Like, I would say maybe 15, 20 years ago. And
what kind of community were you raised in? I mean, wow, that's wild.
Right? I mean, I lived in Northern Ontario, but at the same time, you know, they ended up moving out west. So it's not a location situation, but it's definitely, you know, I was one of the few to escape that. You know, I'm lucky that some of the family that I'm part of, but on that side of the family, I only talked to one person because everyone else was just so abnormally crazy in my view. And I'm like, I'm not talking to these people. I can't deal with these people. You know, I had an uncle who said to me when my daughter was born, he said, you made your bed, you lie in it. And I'm like, wow. sinner, you know, not doing a good job. And I've always...
You're a bad mother is the message.
I'm a bad mother, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching here from the outside in, and my blood's boiling. Do you still struggle with anger? Do you feel...
I think it's more pity at this point. And I feel sorry for people who become so deluded. And part of me is even apologetic for them. You know, like, well, it's not their fault. They were raised in this way, and they didn't get a chance to see the light, and they were so indoctrinated that they can't see their way out of it. I took university courses and went back to school to try to understand who I was. And it wasn't until I started that journey and understood, you know, the history of political science and archaeology and human nature and psychology and abnormal psychology and started trying to figure out why humanity is the way they were, that it allows me to sort of be a little more forgiving about it. I'm not one of those hateful atheists. I'm proud that I believe what I believe. And at the same time, I just try to, you know, maintain the peace because I'm surrounded by so many people. Most of my friends are Christian and they know I don't believe, but they're still my friends and they still love me and I appreciate that. So it's hard for me. Like I tell them why I don't believe and they say, oh, well, that's lies. You don't believe because you had such a bad experience with Christianity. And I'm like, well, yes, but it's part of the whole larger picture. And it's hard for me to resolve that something that's supposed to speak such beauty and eloquence and human nature is tied to so many evil things. You know, it's a real paradox in my head.
Well, I used to discount when people would say something traumatic must have happened to you. And I used to sort of knee jerk away from that. But sometimes it does take some sort of a cage rattling event to cause us to reevaluate, you know, to see things with fresh eyes. And so I've stopped apologizing about the moments in my life when something happened and it just caused me to just sort of snap out of it. And I had to go re-examine my priorities and re-examine my information. And sometimes you need those. I mean, those people who are just phoning it in every single day, in many instances, they don't have a motivation or opportunity to re-evaluate and to reassess.
That's right. So, my daughter was a catalyst for me and I'm grateful, as difficult as it's been to be her mom. I'm grateful every day for everything that I learned because of her, everything that I've, you know, had brought into my life. Yes, it's a traumatic, horrible, difficult thing to deal with, and I'll have always wanted better for her as a human being, not to have to suffer all that she does. But at the same time, I'm like, I wouldn't trade my knowledge and who I am today to have her healthy, because I don't think I would be the person I am and have the understanding I have if it wasn't for her. So,
Stephanie, you inspire me. Thank you for sharing your story and your perspective and all my best with. Sounds like you've got some good things going on in your family, yeah?
Yes, I have an amazing family. I've been married 29 years in August. I got married very young to leave home. I was 17 and I have a beautiful children and a great future ahead of me.
Wonderful. Thank you, Stephanie, for being a part of the conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
So let's say that you were, for some reason, at or around a faith healer or a church service, a healing service with your spouse, with your fiance, with your life partner, and they were disabled, and all of a sudden you saw that they were being targeted. They were being surrounded by people who were promising them a healing miracle. How would you respond? How would you respond when it didn't work out, when the healing didn't arrive? Well, coming up after the break, I'm going to speak to a couple along this very same scenario. She is disabled, and he is often a spectator as religious people and institutions declare that she is about to get a healing miracle. How would it make you feel? We're going to get into it after this. Hang on. My patrons on Patreon get a commercial-free version of the broadcast every week, and they get a bonus show just for them every single month. I'm thankful for my sponsors on the radio, so thankful for them. But I'm also thankful for the patrons, because they really do help me to do what I do full-time, produce the content that I produce for The Thinking Atheist. You help make it happen, and it's huge. So thank you. And if you want to become a patron, you can choose the parameters of your patronage. You can choose if you want to support per episode or a dollar amount every month that you choose, whatever. You can go to patreon.com/Seth Andrews. I've got Tori and Patrick on Skype. You're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
It's going good.
Tell me your story. What's up?
Well, you know, I was already kind of losing my faith when I was in college. But, you know, what really hammered it down was my mom getting cancer and battling it for 3 years and then dying as a result of her breast cancer. It was totally unfair, you know? She believed that she would always get better. The church was saying stuff like, oh, we prayed for her. And then they are like, so, because I'm part of a Pentecostal church, or I was, and they are always saying stuff to her like, oh, we believe you're going to get better and you're going to be healed.
And the dreams.
And dreams and stuff like that. And
wait, they dreamed that she would receive her healing?
They dreamed that she would receive her healing, or they would get visions or something like that. And every time, like, it started to get to where I every time I heard that, I would just roll my eyes. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Just let her get better. Stop telling her this shit, you know?
I know the Pentecostal church has these, I don't know if they like vision quest kind of things, you know, where they're like, I had a vision, you know, I walked in the clouds. And it's almost like listening to Jesse Duplantis talk about how he visited heaven and hell and came back to tell the tale. And then they come and sort of, they're the messengers that give us these kinds of stories. I saw the future and your mother was healed. Was it that kind of thing?
It was that kind of thing. I mean, the Pentecostal church that I was part of, they're very much like that. They do the glossolalia thing where one person speaks in tongues, which is really weird. And I always thought it was super weird when I was young, and someone else would translate, and they're doing it like they're actually speaking another language. And it's just, what are you doing, guys? Come on.
I wish I had here at my fingertips some audio of some of that. There's no experience like sitting in a Pentecostal service, sometimes right during the middle of the message, and out of the back of the auditorium, somebody will just start screaming in what is supposed to be another language, but what often sounds just like gibberish. You know? It's like, is that a language? What is that? What are you doing?
I remember the first time I heard it when I was a kid. I thought it was hilarious, and my sister and I, we were kind of joking around, and my aunt overheard us, and she started screaming at us and telling us that it was a sin to blaspheme the Holy Spirit. And of course, I didn't understand it at the time. But
yeah, don't blaspheme the Holy Spirit, Tori. That's the one that you don't get forgiveness for. I'm just saying.
Unforgivable sin.
Yeah. I mean, kids, you know.
And that, you know, that legitimately terrified me when I was younger.
Yeah, the truth doesn't get by kids. And it's crazy how it gets ingrained to you as you get older, these things that you're taught.
Now, Tori, you have a disability of some kind. Can you describe it?
Yeah, I have osteogenesis imperfecta, which is a brittle bone disorder, and severe scoliosis. And as a result of the scoliosis, I've been diagnosed with a pulmonary disease that is probably what's going to take my life if I don't die in some crazy accident.
When I hear brittle bones, I always think of like Mr. Glass from...
Yeah, exactly. Same condition.
From, oh, crap. What's the name of the movie?
Unbreakable.
That's right.
That's the exact condition.
And so then all these other dominoes start to fall with the pulmonary condition and everything else coming into play. Are you part of a church environment or family?
We go to an Episcopalian church because it's way milder than my old Pentecostal church.
And, I mean, I like to go there because I have friends that go
there.
Yeah,
we're mostly doing it for the...
And the coffee.
The coffee. And, coffee and the free food and the people, honestly. I just like, being part of a community.
Isn't that interesting? I think that's why many people attend. I mean, you can interchange the sermons, but they go because they enjoy the people. They appreciate the family atmosphere. They often like the music, and there's good coffee, right?
Right. Yeah. And we have a gay best friend that goes there, so.
Yeah.
So, Tori, have you been the subject of healing prayers?
Oh, many, many times. In fact, I think I'm targeted by every new pastor that blows through town. Because they'll tell me, I see you, and I'm going to pray for you, and they pray for me, and they're like...
And God can heal anything.
Yeah, in 3 days, your back's going to be straight, you're going to be healed, you're going to be walking. 3 days later, they can't even look me in the eye when they see me again.
Are you in a wheelchair, Tori?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they come over and they say, we name and claim your healing. But when the time comes and you're not healed, they just check out.
Pretty much.
If they come back, because we don't go to that church regularly anymore, just for my dad sometimes, like Christmas and stuff like that.
Now, wait, is this the Episcopal or is this still Pentecostal? Because it sounds more Pentecostal to me.
I'm still part of the Pentecostal church. So
okay.
We go there sometimes for the, for the dinners.
Holidays, yeah. As his mom liked to say, the CEO is the Christmas Easter only crowd.
I'll start with you, but I want to hear perspectives from both of you. I'll start with you, Tori. How does that make you feel whenever you're prayed over and the prayer doesn't happen?
Well, I've come to expect it, but like with people like Patrick's mom, who I know have a lot of faith, I get really upset because after she died, it wasn't a week later. I was hearing them say the same thing over somebody else that was diagnosed. And I thought, wow, how can they have the audacity?
Patrick, does it make you mad whenever they come after Tori in that way?
It does, because it's just, I remember what it was like with my mom. And even after she died, it was just like, oh, we know she's in heaven. And it's just like, fuck you. That doesn't change anything. I'm still hurting.
Are you cognizant of a scenario where it looks like they're taking the brush and painting a happy ending because they can't deal with the reality of it?
I am, but it makes me angry because, I was very much in a dark place when my mom died, and it felt like they were taking advantage.
It felt like they were saying,
I mean,
you should
be happy.
I know that
they cared. It was just...
I mean, I just lost both of my parents, and so it felt like everyone was telling me, you should be happy they're in a better place.
Yeah,
the better place was here with me.
A door opened and they pass through and one day you'll walk through and we'll all be reunited kind of thing.
Yeah, and those kind of platitudes don't help.
No.
I always like to say, and some people think I'm equivocating, but there are a lot of people inside the church who they are genuinely compassionate. I mean, they really do hurt for people who are hurting.
I will say that, yes, but at another church that we had gone to, my brother had just died. And the story my mom always told me, the reason we left that church is because someone came up to her and said, he's burning in hell, right? Because he was a drinker. And that was the most devastating thing I have ever heard in my life.
So many people that lose somebody they love. When I lost my parents, the words, I'm sorry for your loss, kind of felt hollow because I really, and I kicked myself for saying that. And so when I hear that they're in a better place, that goes from being hollow to being angry. And I feel like, there are people who say those things because they don't know how to deal with them. But I feel like coming out of the church, they don't really help you with your grief. They don't always help you face reality.
What would you like to hear, Tori? I mean, if someone was to walk up and lay a hand on your shoulder, whatever, I mean, what would help you? What would encourage you?
I don't know. Maybe like something like, I'm scared too. I really don't know, because what do you say? I've sat there and I've thought about it many times.
Well, I mean, as someone who's felt the same pain I always like say when someone dies, I'm sorry for your loss and I understand it. I'm here for you, if you need me. It's stuff like that. It helps me feel better. Even if it's like, I'm sorry, it's still... they understand. because you know they're being empathetic.
But the thing is like, when people in the church see me,
they see her frail body. They just see her in a wheelchair.
And then they want to fix me. And that's why I don't usually get upset at them when they approach me. But when it doesn't work, when it obviously doesn't work, and they go to somebody else and do that, that's when I get angry.
Sometimes it'd be enough if they just stand right next to you and put their arm around you and say, hey, if there's anything you need, let me know. I'll meet the need. I'll be over. I'll bring you lunch. I'll visit you at the hospital. I'll just hang out. I mean, just human to human connection, right?
Yeah, human connection.
Yeah, be a genuine person. Don't, you know, say, hey, I'm going to fix this. And then when you can't fix it, just be like, ignore me.
It seems like kind of a cheap shot for these guys, these traveling ministers, these revival preachers to sort of blow through town, name and claim your healing. I mean, to do something so intimately personal and sort of cross that boundary and then just jet. I mean, it just seems kind of like a cheap shot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that happens all the time. One specific pastor that told Tori her back was going to be straight has done that to everybody who has scoliosis.
And even within our own church, it's like, or they would say, and in front of me, no less. That's what really got me.
How's your life looking these days? You doing okay outside of all of these sort of platitudes from the church?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking for work right now as a teacher. And I mean, we have our own place, you know, first time we ever got our own place together.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's that. And we've been together 10 years.
Yeah.
You're building a life and you love each other and you got each other's back. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is because we can't get married for financial reasons, but we have everybody in the church and everywhere asking us, when y'all going to get married? And at this point, we've been together longer than most married couples. We're pretty happy.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how people frame family? Natalie and I lived together, I think, 4 years before we got married. And people looked at us like, when are you going to become a legitimate family? And I thought to myself, we are a legitimate family. What are you talking about? You guys frame family any way you want. You've got that right. I wish you all happiness. Thanks for sharing your story. And you guys take care of each other out there, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you. Too,
I had a message from Rachel. She said, I have cerebral palsy. All my life, I've had to rely on crutches and wheelchairs to get around. Naturally, I've had more than my fair share of encounters with so-called faith healers or proponents of the same. I'm apparently their express ticket to the hereafter. Two incidents in particular stand out. The first occurred when I was in junior high. One of my teachers, who happened to be a born-again Christian, took it upon himself to heal me. I mean, chanting, laying on of hands, the whole package. That might not have been so bad had he not chosen to do so in the middle of a school corridor, as an assembly filed out into the hall. Mortified isn't the word. But what could I do? He was the adult, and I feared some sort of reprisal if I refused. My mother, when she heard about it, had a few choice words with the school administration. I don't know precisely what she said to them, but I don't recall seeing that teacher again. I like to believe he was fired, but my guess is they merely smiled politely and waved her away, saying that they would handle it. The second incident was about 20 years later. I hail a cab driven by a Christian whose recent conversion had given him enthusiasm, but no tact. The first thing he said was, "What's wrong with you?" When I took exception to that, he apologized and explained to me that he meant to ask why I hadn't been healed yet. This leads to a discussion about the merits of faith healers. I told him the idea of faith healing the disabled implied that all disabled believers were atheists, or at least unrepentant sinners. That's an insult to every disabled Christian out there. I may have mentioned Johnny Erickson Tata, who was a quadriplegic who took up painting after her accident and became renowned for it. She paints with her teeth, by the way, and honestly, she's amazing. After hemming and hawing a bit, he comes back with, "God uses disabled people as evidence of his power." To which I answered, "You just contradicted yourself. Can you imagine? You over there, you're healed, but not you. I need you to remain disabled to inspire other people." And this made sense to him. The funniest such incident occurred about 10 years ago. A woman approaches me in a bus station, never a good sign, and asks me if she can pray for me. I say, sure, thinking she was going to go off and put in a good word for me to the Almighty. No such luck. I get the laying on of hands again. The funny part is that I'm transgender, and she didn't know. The whole time she's saying, please, God, help this poor girl, I'm chuckling to myself at how this Christian and presumably transphobic woman unwittingly acknowledged my chosen gender. If she only knew. Rachel, thanks for sending that in. I appreciate you very much. On the switchboard, area code 402, you are on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What's your name?
Dustin.
We're talking about praying on the disabled. What are your thoughts? Do you have any experience with this?
Back in the 80s in high school, a friend invited me to his church, and I wasn't familiar with Assembly of God or Pentecostal. I can't remember which it was, or maybe the same thing. But anyway, Dustin was a teenager, and I was born with a vision problem called ocular albinism. It's a genetic defect. And during the course of the service, the pastor, the lady pastor, started the high energy portion of the evening. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And she, during the course of all this, comes up and grabs me and pleads with me, what do you want from Jesus? I looked at her and I'm like, well, what do you think I want to be able to see? And evidently that didn't fit the narrative because she didn't even acknowledge that and just went on to somebody else who knew the proper response of wailing and moaning.
So she just wants you to bounce the praise service right back in her face kind of thing. Huh?
I think so. Yeah, the volleyball thing.
Yeah.
But being a teenager, of course, I didn't know what's expected in social situations like that. I thought it was a legitimate question.
Yeah. She didn't even say, I'm praying for you. She just went up and sort of grabbed you by the throat. And you know, I mean, I'm trying to think, what are you supposed to do with this, right?
Yeah, of course, this has been 30 years or more, and I still remember it. So,
what do you want from Jesus, Dustin? 3 decades later, the question is still on the table, damn it. We want to know.
to be 100% physically and emotionally and psychologically intact, just like anybody else.
Do you spend any time in church these days at all, or are you done with it all?
No, partially because of my work schedule. I work in the evenings. I actually work right now. But when my mom died 9 years ago when I was 40, it made me stop and really start to think, well, what do I believe? And actually, the associate pastor at our Methodist church at the time said something that stuck with me. He talked about faith is regional, cultural. Started looking around, it is. And then because of your podcast, I learned about Hitchens and Dawkins and started reading their books, doing a little bit of research, and I realized, well, even Bart Ehrman does one of those great courses,
yeah,
lecture series. And in there, he hits on some of the contradictions in the Bible, and one of my personal favorites is in one telling of the New Testament book, and forgive me, can't quote it right now. It's been a while. One version has Jesus' crucifixion on the day of Passover. The other book has his crucifixion the day before Passover. That simply cannot both be true. Right there tells me that cannot possibly be the infallible, perfect word of God.
Yeah, Ehrman's fantastic when it comes to showing the gospels side by side. I mean, you want to refute the Jesus story as fact, as a story where all the facts line up perfectly in every incantation. Just read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John back to back, side by side. They clash against each other. It's 4 different Jesuses that are born differently, they live differently, and they die differently. So, and Ehrman, you know, he's a great resource for that. So you're deity free. No gods required for you then.
Well, I'm perfectly happy to learn that God exists, but I believe the retail version of God that we're presented with by human beings is completely manufactured simply for the purposes of control. I like what Dawkins said in his book, The God Delusion. The uneducated believe it's true. The educated believe that it's not true. the political class believes that's useful.
Well, I want you to, on the record, Dustin, I want you to know that, you know, you were a podcast listener, but at no point did I ever reach up and grab you by the shirt collar and shake you. I just want that on the record that I never crossed into your, over that boundary. Okay.
No one's in my personal space. How wonderful it is.
I hope you're doing well. Things good in your life, Dustin?
Yes. I fortunately, even though I'm legally blind, nearly, it's real murky. 20 over 200 is legally blind. That's the biggie. 20 over 100 is the line below that. I can read part of that. There needs to be something in between. So depending on the day of the week or how you want to slice it, I may or may not actually be legally blind, but I do drive with glasses that are called bioptics. So I'm in good shape. There's a lot of people worse off than me, and I have something that a lot of people don't have in this world. And
yeah, I can see why the radio show would appeal to you as well. You know, it's sort of theater of the mind anyway. So to sort of receive the audible version of all of this information. Did you do audiobooks for Dawkins and whatnot? Or?
Yeah, for all of them, because the work that I do is such that it lends itself to listening to books. So I've gone through a lot of books.
Dude, I read Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great when it was released around that time. And I just, a couple of months ago, downloaded the audio version because I just wanted to hear Hitchens read it in his voice, you know? And so I'm sort of taking the journey again. And so I'm a believer, you know, if you're doing the kind of work or you do a lot of travel or you're in a place where you can have that stuff sort of playing along, it's like having a storyteller with you all the time, you know?
It's good. People get funny about money, sex, and religion, and even close family. I've got some friends that on a camping trip, we were walking down a gravel road in central Missouri in the wee hours of the morning, stars just bling the sky. And I looked up and I said, guys, what if? And that's no joke. That's all it took before they jumped on me. And the power of Laney will compel you. Oh, didn't even let me get it out.
What were they trying to tell you? What were they going after you with?
I was going to say, what if there's others out there like us or ahead of us? And doesn't that even make God greater? And they don't even see it that way. I often ask my close friends when they start giving me a hard time about my apparent heathenism, I ask them, well, why didn't Jesus cure blindness?
And what do they say?
They don't have an answer.
Well, they did it. I mean, blindness was cured in the Bible on several different occasions. I believe Jesus...
Not the blind. Blindness.
I see. As a human condition throughout perpetuity.
Indeed.
Blindness.
Indeed. Yes.
That's a common sense question. You shouldn't be doing that, Dustin. Like, I heard a brilliant one the other day. It was something I'm going to remember forever, but I did this speech in Toronto. We were talking about, does it make sense to go and bless the food before you eat it? You say the prayer of blessing, bless the food. And somebody had a brilliant statement. They said, wouldn't it make more sense to go and bless at the doors of the grocery store? Just bless every ingredient. And that way, when they all go out to their respective meals across the city and around the world, they're pre-blessed. You don't have to stop and say the prayer because you've already sort of front-loaded the blessing. And I said, well, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't Jesus allow us to pre-bless the food? I don't get it.
It is silly.
Dustin, I appreciate you, and I appreciate your input into the show. And, you know, thanks for giving us something to think about here and for listening. It really does mean a lot that you're out there and you're part of this community. That's huge for me. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the call.
You know, it's interesting as a producer, as a show host, when you're trying to find a way to close a broadcast like this, a show that's really about perspectives. It's not like we're fixing the problem, really. I mean, beyond giving people perspective, allowing others to look into the windows of people's lives to talk about, you know, what it's been like for them and to give them a chance to just sort of express their frustration and communicate some of the stuff that they go through. And I think that's hugely valid. I think it's important. I think human stories and human perspectives, the anecdotes from people's lives help the rest of us better understand. I think it's important. But it's not like we're solving the problem of preying on those who have disabilities. It's not like everybody and anybody on planet Earth is going to stop using your tragedy as their soapbox. It's not like the church is going to stop preying on the vulnerable or the people they perceive as vulnerable. But if you do a broadcast like this, how do you put a punctuation mark on the end of the conversation, at least for today? Well, I saw a blog written by Anna Swanson on the Washington Post website, and it had linked to a thread on Reddit. It says, a powerful Reddit thread reveals what it's like to have a disability. Now, this is obviously somebody else's perspective. You can take it or leave it. You can agree or disagree. But I'm just going to read. These are 14 suggestions that people with disabilities made about how other people might treat them. Number one, don't tell someone with a disability that they are inspiring. A Reddit user named Authentic Space said, don't call me an inspiration. Be your own damn inspiration. I don't know, is it patronizing to tell someone that they inspire you? Number two, don't try to heal people with disabilities with health foods, essential oils, or yoga. A Reddit user named Errant Light said, trying to push your fad diet on me like it's some sort of miracle cure. I have a hard enough time with food as is. I don't need to drink that smoothie that smells like a fish tank. Someone named Dragoon DM said, paralyzed from the waist down, eh? You know, a raw food diet would clear that right up in no time, cleans all the toxins right out, and lets your body's natural healing processes kick in. And of course, Dragoon's sarcasm meter is at full kick. Number three, it's not your business to question a person's handicapped parking sticker. Mega Man said this, I was out driving to the mall with my seemingly non-handicapped cousin, and we parked in a handicapped space. A lady sees us both get out and throws an absolute fit and waves down a cop as we stand around laughing, as we both have our own handicap placards. When the cop shows up and starts seriously questioning us, my cousin looks back at me and says, hold my leg, I'm going in. He then proceeded to remove his prosthetic leg and hop over to the cop and lady, who both realize they've goofed. And here I am in the parking lot holding a fake leg and unable to stop laughing. Number four. Also, don't question service dogs, motorized scooters, or people who take the elevator to go up or down one floor. Number five. Don't assume that only the old have disabilities. Number six, don't assume that all disabilities are visible. DJ Tanner said, from a mental disabilities perspective, telling us that it's all in our head and we should just calm down can be really irritating to hear. Sure, it's all in our head. That's because it's a neurological disorder, one which we clearly have no control over. Someone else said, I can now visualize someone in a wheelchair being told, hey, it's all in your legs. Number seven, don't assume that someone has a disability just because they look or speak differently. Number eight, if you're talking to someone who's having a hard time hearing you, try changing your wording or lowering your voice. Someone named Shepherd said, people who are hard of hearing are unable to hear certain frequencies very well. It varies, obviously, but yelling at them is rude and doesn't work at all. Speak normally first, then allow the person to ask for clarification. If they do, speak a tad slower, maybe with a deeper voice. Usually it's the higher frequencies that go first. Number nine. Sometimes all people with disabilities want you to do is treat them like a normal person. A Reddit user, Iggy, said, one of my favorite stories to tell when it comes to that is when I was working as an actor on a haunted trail. I saw this girl in a wheelchair, and she looked tough and calm, like she hadn't been scared yet. You get good at judging people's fear levels. I love a good challenge, and so I went after her. She was so scared, I wouldn't have been surprised if she jumped right out of her chair. Everyone, visitors and actors both, stopped and stared at us for a second. Suddenly, she burst out cheering and laughing and gave me a high five. Apparently, she'd been going to haunted houses for years trying to get scared, but no one ever did because she was handicapped. All she'd ever wanted was for someone to have the guts to treat her like a regular person and scare the crap out of her because that's what she paid for. I ran ahead and told the next group to pass it on that this lady was here looking for the scare of her life and not to go easy on her. Number 10. Don't touch someone's wheelchair unless you have permission. Trillium said a friend of mine who is wheelchair-bound told us how people constantly offer to push her to her destination and oftentimes go start pushing her along. One person said, "I'm helping," and he just started pushing her in her chair. And she yelled back, "No, you're kidnapping." And he stopped. Number 11. Some people in manual wheelchairs see them as an extension of their body, so pushing someone is as weird and infantilizing as picking up a stranger and carrying them. Infantilizing. Never heard that one. Black White Cat on Reddit said, "Years ago, I just finished working. I was putting the tools in the van when a man came by in an old wheelchair. We were on a very steep hill with a very broken and uneven sidewalk. The guy was really struggling to make his way along. I looked up the long, shitty hill and thought he's going to have a really tough time. I didn't know if I should ask if he wanted an assist. Should I just start pushing and try to be funny, asking, 'So where are we going today?' and keep pushing. In the end, I think I just asked if he wanted any help. He stopped completely, slowly looking me up and down. He asked if I have a whole bunch of money I can give him. I told him the truth, which was nope. He chuckled and said he was good and slowly made his way up that nasty hill on a miserably hot summer day. I don't know why, but I wish he would have let me give him a push up the hill. I also don't know why I think of that little exchange so often. It had to have been at least 25 years ago, but it's almost always on my mind." Someone responded, "If someone with a disability needs help, they'll ask for it. They, of all people, know their own limits, and when they reach them, they'll let someone know. Until then, it's important not to assume you know better than someone else what they need or what they can handle." Number 12, just having a disability is not a request for help. Being a disabled person in public is not a way of saying that I need or want help. It's not an invitation to express your personal thoughts, feelings, and ideas. "It's something I cannot help," says Hazy Wake Up on Reddit. "I cannot help it. I'm always disabled. I'm not being disabled at you when you see me, and I'm not constantly thinking about my disability or how I cope with it. Unless I directly ask for help, I'm probably just trying to go about my day." Number 13. Instead of offering to help, try just saying hi. And finally, number 14, don't assume that people with disabilities have the same preferences. Their preferences are just as varied as people without disabilities. Because every disability is different, and every person is different, everyone's going to have different preferences for how they want to be treated. We're all just doing our best to read and judge and respond to the situation in the best way we know how. Being generous when interpreting other people's actions is a kindness. I think folks usually mean well and are just doing what other people have indicated to them in the past is the right thing to do. I'll link this article from Anna Swanson in the Washington Post editorial column. I will put that in the description box of this broadcast. Thanks so much to everybody who participated and called and contributed to this discussion. Next Tuesday, I'm going to teach Sunday school, and I'm going to teach some of the most bizarre, strange, weird-ass stuff in the Bible. And it's going to be a hoot. And I sure hope some Christians get a hold of this show, because they might not even be aware that that stuff exists in their Bibles. So I'll see you back here as Seth Andrews teaches Sunday school next week. Take care. I'll see you then.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.